Good afternoon. This is Bob Kruger with Thought for Food for June of 2021. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print impaired audience, but hopefully be interest to everyone. Among the dates in June to remember is June 6th, which is D-Day, when Allied armed forces landed in Europe, which eventually led to the surrender of Germany and the end of World War II in Europe. The 14th is Flag Day and the birthday of the United States Army, 1775. Father's Day is the 20th. Summer officially begins on the 21st, and the Pledge of Allegiance was recognized by Congress in 1942. The Korean War began on June 25, 1950. On a personal note, both my grandsons and their mother, my youngest daughter, all have birthdays within a week. At the end of last month's program, I promised to begin today's program with this article about honey. It begins, "I have heard honey never spoils. How is that possible? Honey has an unusual composition. As you know, it starts with plant nectar before bees work their magic, and the factors that retard spoilage come into play. First, most of the water is evaporated. The water content dehydrates bacteria. Plus, the resultant honey contains acid, including hydrogen peroxide. This acid also inhibits bacterial growth. And if honey ever crystallizes, you can just set the warm open jar in warm water for a few minutes. One word of caution. Honey should never be given to small children up to 2 years old. Their systems aren't developed enough to handle honey. But if you have a container of honey with a use-by date, pay it no attention. Don't throw it out. Scientists have tasted honey that was 3,000 years old. So pay no attention to the date and enjoy your honey. Is this possible? In mid-May, we were told there were no chicken wings on the menu of one of the Triangle's most popular chicken wing joints. Hillsborough's Wooden Nickel Public House said there weren't any chicken wings in the building. The price, the owner told the customers, simply climbed too high. Hey, y'all, if you hadn't noticed already, the struggle in the food supply world is real right now, owner Dean James wrote on the Wooden Nickel Facebook this week. And unfortunately, it means we're starting off without any chicken wings. Instead, they ran a fried chicken special, rarely on the Wooden Nickel menu, which customers could toss into a wing sauce if they desired. Due to national shortages and epic demand, both cost and product availability are all over the place right now, Mr. James wrote. And we're not exactly sure when this will level out. Rest assured, it will, and the chickens will always have wings, hopefully. They'll be back on our menu as soon as possible, and we're doing our best to deal with this hurdle. Wings are obviously important to us and to you, too. Chicken prices have been elevated for the past year, multiple restaurant owners say, but wholesale prices have doubled in the last 2 months, reaching $150 for a 40-pound box of wings. Supply chain issues aren't just affecting independent restaurants. Large chains like Bojangles and Chick-fil-A have reported some menu items out of stock. Some restaurants, though, say they have to pay the high wholesale price and hope for the best. For Chicken B, a Korean fried chicken restaurant in Durham, the name says it all. Chicken's our main menu item. We can't take it off the menu, the owner, Ji Hoon Kim, said. Sometimes Chicken B's supplier's out, and Mr. Kim said he has to run to Restaurant Depot or the grocery store. He said that while prices may spike, he can't move them off the menu. Cutting profits is forcing the restaurant to take a loss. I know the customer doesn't want to pay $30 for 10 pieces of chicken, Mr. Kim said. We're just trying to hang in there. Hopefully, sooner or later, prices will come back down. We're okay, it's just not a lot of profit. Unfortunately, we just have to take it. For Triangle Sports Bar, Tobacco Road in Raleigh, wings may as well be chiseled into the menu. Owner Alex Amara said he doesn't want diners to wonder what a sports bar would be without wings. You can't take them off the menu, so right now it's tough, he said. The beer helps. Most people, if they're having chicken wings, are also buying a beer. so hopefully we can make it back that way. Restaurant owners like Mr. Amaro said that explanations have been vague from suppliers, that there have been COVID issues and transportation disruptions along the supply line. At Bakura Soul in Durham, co-owner Serena Frederick said chicken wings have to stay on the menu to help balance the multiple pork dishes, but they've been buying fewer wings and selling out. And when we run out, our customers have been annoyed, Ms. Frederick said. We're trying to explain there's a nationwide chicken shortage. The public is just catching up. The Puerto Rican restaurant is popular for slow-cooked pork, collard greens, and trays of baked mac and cheese. They did have to increase prices for wings during the winter as chicken prices continued to climb. With increased vaccination, Ms. Frederick said more people seem to be at the American Tobacco campus where the restaurant is located, and the start of Durham Bulls games could bring in more diners. All of the COVID has been extremely unpredictable, she said. We opened in 2019, so this is our first baseball season. I don't know what we're going to face. I just ask the public to be patient as we work through it. Can we, the public, be patient? The COVID-19 pandemic kept a number of people from continuing to work on plans they may have had about a project they wanted to complete, and we'll share some of those stories with you. When Dame's Chicken and Waffles moved from its longtime downtown Durham location to a larger space a few blocks away, it took 15 months, but construction delays are common for restaurants. When Dame's looked to open a fast casual location on Chapel Hill's Franklin Street, however, a global pandemic derailed plans for a year. It was a 1-2 that the beloved restaurant is just now beginning to move on from. In May, Chapel Hill's Dame's Chicken and Waffles finally opened. It's at 147 East Franklin Street in the space formerly occupied by Bakey's. For now, and likely for the first month, Chapel Hill's Dame will be open for lunch only, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Dame's owners, Randy Wadsworth and Damian Moore, opened in 2010 in downtown Durham, quickly becoming a phenomenon and one of the city's busiest restaurants, especially for weekend brunch. Locations later opened in Cary and Greensboro. Dame's is famous for its crispy fried chicken and large Belgian waffles served with flavored syrups and schmears. In 2019, Dame's was the first restaurant to move into the Liberty Warehouse apartments, eventually joined by Foster Street Coffee and the Durham Food Hall. For the Chapel Hill location, which was slated to open by the end of 2019, Dame's planned something different. When fully open, the Franklin Street restaurant will be a counter-service model tailored more to the grab-and-go needs of students and folks on the go. For now, it's just trying to get up and running. We're trying to get the ball rolling, Mr. Woodward said. We're going with the basic chicken and waffles menu to start. The new Dame's concept is a response to a continued rise of fast casual restaurants, which have grown even more in the Triangle in the past few years with the opening of food halls and the impact of COVID-19 pandemic. Recently, national chains Torchy's Tacos and Dave's Hot Chicken announced expansions in North Carolina, and Raleigh chef Ashley Christensen's BB's Crispy Chicken is one of the Triangle's anticipated openings this year. Mr. Wadsworth said the Chapel Hill location could have been open sooner, but that the timing of the pandemic forced a pause. Open prematurely, he said, could have risked the restaurant. COVID had a major impact on us, he said. We made the decision to save the locations instead of going on and opening. Dame's is working to hire staff in May. He's optimistic the worst effects of the pandemic are behind the industry and credits customers with keeping their popular brand afloat. It's been rough, Mr. Wadsworth said. We want to thank those who kept us here. A lot of places didn't make it, but our customers kept us open. It seems we customers have a good bit of influence. Another new face on the block, Raleigh's Days is a brewery-only town, are numbered. Shady Grove Cider, Raleigh's only cidery, will open next year as a part of the city's East End market development. The new cidery pairs two beer industry vets, bidding to set the record straight on cider. Most people are introduced to cider as woodchuck or angry orchard and never give it a second thought, said co-owner Oliver Cook. There's nothing in Raleigh that has anything to do with cider. With Shady Grove, Mr. Cook says he hopes to get ahead in the cider game and offer something new to Raleigh. He looked at downtown spaces and ultimately joined the East End development as one of the project's first publicly announced tenants. Triangle restaurateur Giorgio Bataxis also signed on to the development with plans for a new French restaurant called East End Bistro. The $30 million East End market is owned and developed by SLI Capital and Atlas Stark and will become a 67,000-square-foot mixed-use project at Five Points on Whittaker Mill Road. The owners say a cider house helps it set apart from other current developments in the city. Cideries are a significant national trend that Raleigh's a bit behind on, said Gabe Goulios, managing partner of Atlas Stark, in a news release. Shady Grove Cidery will continue to expand the East End Market's presence as a food and beverage-oriented destination, we envision. The ciders made by Shady Grove initially will be poured straight from the tanks. Mr. Cook hopes to have cider to serve by this September, which will end up on tap lists and pop-ups in and around Raleigh. The cidery aims to open in March of 2022. While cider will be the focus, Shady Grove will also have cocktails, beer, and wine. Its space at East End will include a 3,000-square-foot product facility and tap room, plus a 3,000-square-foot patio. When it's open, Mr. Cox says Shady Grove will lean into its name, filling the space with greenery. Mr. Cook comes to cider from the beer world. He spent the last decade and a half as a beer representative for Bogue Ales out of Oregon and his hometown brewery, Terrapin Beer Company in Athens, Georgia. At the present time, Mr. Cook is the general manager of the Trophy Brewing-owned bottle shop State of Beer. Although the Triangle is one of the busiest parts of the state for breweries, cider houses are few and far between. Bold Cider Works and Botanist and Barrel are among the most prominent. Some drinkers have ciders for their sweet, sugary pucker, and others it's that sweetness that keeps them away. Shady Grove will specialize in dry ciders made from local North Carolina apples. He said, staying away from the sweet side of cider in favor of apples that are tart and crisp. The process is closer to that of wine and beer, Mr. Cook said. Cider takes longer than beer to make. It's the time that's expensive. It's not the equipment. Mr. Cook says that while there's a local brewery in every town these days, the beer itself is rarely local, usually coming from hops and ingredients grown far away. Cider, at least in North Carolina, is much easier to call local, pointing to the 450 heirloom apple varieties grown in this state. With cider, we truly are local, Mr. Cook said. It's really fermented juice. It's a seasonality to it. It's a living, breathing aspect of our special state. Mr. Cook almost gets poetic in his talk about cider. In the June 2021 issue of the National Health and Nutrition Letter published by Tufts University Friedman School of Nutrition, Science and Policy suggests we make the most of berry season. Summertime is peak berry season. There is much to love about those juicy gems. Berries are a good source of fiber, nutrients, and phytochemicals, plant compounds that are active in our bodies. Let's look at why and how to include nutritious, delicious, and widely available berries in a healthy dietary pattern now and all year long. Berries are often called superfoods and have been credited with a long list of health benefits. While simply eating berries may not ensure good health, they are an excellent source of many phytochemicals. Phytochemicals from food may help promote health and potentially protect against some chronic conditions, said Jeffrey Bloomberg, Ph.D., Professor Emeritus at the School of Nutrition Service and Policy at Tufts University. According to a recent review of studies, the antioxidant activity of some of these phytochemicals found in berries may be contributing to the prevention and treatment of cardiovascular disease, cancer, and diabetes. If you're eating food to be healthy, your diet should be rich in phytochemicals, and berries are a good way to get them, Dr. Bloomberg says. If you're not a fan of berries, fruits and vegetables similar colors have similar phytochemicals. Definitely eat blueberries if you like them, he said, but you can also eat purple potatoes and red cabbage. And don't forget to eat plant foods that provide the other colors of the rainbow, like spinach and kale. While phytochemicals in berries are also found in other plant foods, tests reveal that berries are richer in certain aspects than many other fruits or vegetables. One of the unique things about berries is that we eat both the fruit and the seeds, a potential reason for greater health benefits. If you're concerned about the high sugar content in most berries, don't be, said Dr. Alice Lichtenstein, professor of nutrition and policy at Friedman School. She offers this advice. The sugar in berries is contained within the structure of the food, greatly slowing the speed of digestion compared with processed foods. Other compounds in berries, particularly the fiber, also slow the digestion and offset potential harmful of the small amount of natural sugar. Numerous long-term studies show that people who eat more fruit, including berries, have a lower risk of developing diabetes, strongly arguing against any harms of the sugar in the berries. Fresh berries are wonderful, but the form of the berry matters in terms of health benefits. In season, local fresh berries may be considered the ultimate choice, but there really is no berry season anymore, as fresh berries are available year-round. In any season, frozen berries are a convenient option with a long shelf life. She adds, with dried fruit, unlike fresh fruit, you may end up eating more than intended unless you're mindful of portion sizes. It's best to choose dried fruit that does not have sweeteners. Check the ingredient list for added sugars, such as concentrated apple juice. Fruits, including berries, are most flavorful and nutritious at their peak of ripeness and don't ripen much after being picked. Look for fresh berries that are richly colored, firm, plump, and dry, without mold, bruises, dents, or blemishes. Wash berries just before using to remove soil, microbes, and pesticides by rinsing them under plain running water. Air dry, spin dry in a salad spinner, or pat dry with a clean paper towel or clean cloth. Just remember, berries are not a cure-all. They need to be part of an overall healthy dietary plan. Berries are a great choice and very vegetable in terms of how they can be enjoyed, Dr. Lichtenstein says. But, she says, although berries may be a delicious addition to many dishes, I'm sorry to say that topping a hot fudge sundae with berries does not make it a healthy choice. Coming out of the pandemic, restaurants are at a crossroad. The last year has asked questions of delivery and takeout, tipping and labor, downtown and suburbs, and what it means to be a restaurant. With something of a food hall hybrid, a new concept aims to rethink what a food hall is and where we're likely to find it. Crafton, a name combining the words craft and kitchen, is that hybrid, taking the vendors of food halls to the sit-down model of restaurants. It's the creation of co-owners Kip Downer and Max Trujillo, and they plan to open two locations in the next 2 years. The first will be in Knightdale, which is to open later this year, with a second opening in Clayton in 2022. We thought about not just what people want in a pandemic, but what people are longing for regarding the restaurant experience, Mr. Trujillo said. It takes the best of food halls and restaurants. It fuses together the variety of a food hall and the hospitality of a restaurant. Mr. Downer comes from a development background, and Mr. Trujillo is a restaurant industry veteran who co-hosts the North Carolina F&B podcast with Matthew Weiss, interviewing chefs, bartenders, wine reps, and other personalities within North Carolina's hospitality industry. Mr. Trujillo has spent most of his career in the front of house restaurants from Los Angeles to Raleigh, but Crafton is the first project he has owned a piece of. I figure it's time to put my money where my mouth is, he said. Crafton will be a sit-down operation with servers and tables like a restaurant. but with diners choosing from different menus. Mr. Trujillo will design a bar program around classic cocktails, approachable wines, and a variety of beer. Like other food halls, the owners will operate the bar and lease kitchen space to the vendors. The vendor list for Nightdale includes the corner Venezuelan serving arepas, a Finca burger with burgers and fries, Poblano's tacos making tacos, burritos, quesadillas, and a pizza shop, Floritatoria. Mr. Trujillo says chefs often put so much focus on the kitchen and menu that the front of the restaurant can sometimes be a struggle. I like the variety. Friends have different eating habits and restrictions, and everybody wants what they want, and they don't have to compromise, he said. We almost didn't want to identify as a food hall. It's the evolution of a food hall and the expansion of a restaurant. But when groups go to food halls, they immediately split up, breaking off into different lines for different vendors and reconvening at different times. Mr. Trujillo says that the thing that makes food halls great for groups also makes them bad for hanging out. It gets even more complicated if somebody wants to pay for everyone, he said. The 4,500-square-foot Nightdale Crafton is currently under construction at 706 Money Court off Nightdale Boulevard. The Clayton location at 229 Briarcliff Drive off Route 42 is in the planning and design stage. The Clayton location will be somewhat larger, expanding to 6,000 square feet and including six vendors. Each will have a two-story patio. Before the pandemic, the food hall trend couldn't be stopped in the Triangle. Morgan Street Food Hall and Transfer Company Food Hall, both in downtown Raleigh, changed the landscape of going out in Raleigh, each featuring large outdoor patios and central bars and a collection of diverse dining options. The Durham Food Halls followed, and more were planned for Johnson County and North Hills. All the things you think you need to drive downtown for, you can have in your neighborhood, Mr. Trujillo said. If successful, he believes that Crafton can be built throughout the Triangle's towns and suburbs. We're not completely reinventing the wheel, he said. There's an opportunity and excitement in smaller towns from doing the podcast. I know this place is growing like crazy and is expanding. The chicken sandwich world, according to Ashley Christensen, is just as hot as it is not. In late May, the James Beard award-winning chef unveiled the menu for Beebe's Christian Chicken, her fast casual group of restaurants opening this year. At the heart of Beebe's are chicken sandwiches, especially spicy chicken sandwiches. Half of Beebe's sandwich menu includes a series of escalating spicy sauces, from the tang of a buffalo sauce, the tingle of a jalapeno, an Alabama white sauce of Duke's mayonnaise spiked with Tabasco, and the red scorpion, which combines tropical fruit with scorpion peppers, reaching 35,000 on the Scoville scale, or roughly five times as spicy as a jalapeno. The milder sandwiches come without hot sauce, topped with just pickles or veggies, as well as one with pimento cheese and another with barbecue and cheese sauces, and a warning to have napkins handy. In putting a spotlight on spice, Ms. Christensen said the range of hot chicken sandwiches goes from tepid to searing, and that she wants Beebe's to allow spice lovers to choose their own version. There's a lot of hot and spicy chicken out there, she said in an email. It's generally hotter than hell or slightly spiced mayo. We love the idea of options here and being able to share the Scoville scale so people can really have a clear understanding of what they're signing up for. The last thing in the world you want is to get home and have a sandwich that's too spicy to enjoy or doesn't have the kick for which you were hoping. The Scoville scale measures the heat of hot peppers, from zero Scoville units for bell peppers to millions for the world's hottest peppers. The Smithsonian Magazine said a typical bottle of Tabasco hot sauce is 2,500 to 5,000 Scoville units. Fried chicken sandwiches have been popular ever since they were slapped together between two pieces of bread, but all at once teetering on an obsession. Menus throughout the Triangle, including Christensen's Beasley's Chicken Plus Honey preach the crunchy, salty, fatty gospel. It's some kind of timeless offering, Ms. Christensen told the News and Observer in pre-pandemic 2020. There's some version of a crispy chicken dish in nearly all cultures of food. Beebe's represents a local contender in the ongoing chicken sandwich wars, which have pitted the large fast food chains in the country in pursuit of the golden brown glory. The likes of Popeyes, Zaxby's, McDonald's, Wendy's, and others have launched new chicken sandwiches in the past few years, each aimed at unseating Chick-fil-A from its restaurant sandwich throne. Beebe plans to open 3 initial locations this year, beginning with the Midtown East development in Raleigh, followed by University Hill in Durham and Parkside Commons in Cary. The first Beebe's is scheduled to open in July, depending on construction delays. The Midtown East development is a part of Raleigh's Wegmans Shopping Center and includes a Cava and a newly opened Torchy's Tacos. The world's largest meat producer was targeted by hackers, JBS learned over the weekend, hitting the industry as it continues to strain against supply chain upheavals caused by the coronavirus pandemic. JBS's 5 biggest beef plants in the U.S., which together handle 22,500 cattle a day, have halted processing following a weekend attack on the company's computer networks, according to JBS posts on Facebook, labor unions, and employees. These outrages alone have wiped out nearly a fifth of America's production. Slaughter operations across Australia were also down, according to a trade group. One of Canada's largest beef plants was idle for a second day. The company said in a news release that it detected the intrusion on its computer networks in North America and Australia on Sunday, but that its backup servers were not affected. The company is said to be working with an outside cyber security firm to restore its systems. Although unaware of any evidence that the attackers compromised on misused data tied to its customers, suppliers, or employees, JBS said resolving the fallout from the attack may delay certain transactions with customers or suppliers. It did not specify how its operations may have been affected. JBS did not immediately respond to a request for comment. JBS said it notified the White House of the ransom attack Sunday and followed up with the administration Monday to say that the ransom demand came from a criminal organization likely tied to Russia, according to White House Deputy Secretary Karen Jean Pierre, who spoke to reporters aboard Air Force One on Tuesday. The White House is engaging directly with the Russian government on this matter and delivered the message that responsible states do not harbor ransomware criminals. The FBI is investigating the attack, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture has reached out to several major meat processors to alert them of the situation. Officials are assessing. We've run out of time for today's episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. This is Bob Kruger reading for the North Carolina Radio Reading Service. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. So long.